So last year you released this 25 years release record. What was the involvement of the band to this product? Because sometimes you have the feeling that sometimes it's only a label-oriented project.
No, but this was actually, yeah, of course, label. But I think I'm thinking about the documentary, the Pursuit of Vikings. That was pretty much all the director Phil and the producer Alex. Those two guys put it all together. So basically, we had an interview like this. They asked us a few questions and we answered. We gave them some material from the old days that we had home, you know, old pictures and stuff. And then they put together a whole story. They interviewed a bunch of people and put together this amazing story. So I think that is all thanks to them. And for the live shows, we just go there and do our thing. We don't really think too much. I mean, we obviously have the live show already, you know, lights, that's the light guy. And, you know, we only do what we do and the rest is everybody else.
And for so for the movie, kind of telling the story of the band from the beginning, one way or the other, were you surprised by the people who intervened, who say nice things about the band, or do you have yourself kind of retrospective view from these 25 years?
Yeah, I think the results were great, and obviously, I mean, how do you do 25 years into 1 hour 40 minutes? It's going to be difficult. There's going to be a lot of stuff that we didn't even talk about. But I think they made a cool story. I think, obviously, it's not everything. But I think the story itself is interesting. And even though you don't have to know us or like our band, you can still watch it and enjoy it as a documentary. So I think it's great. And I liked it.
Are you one way or the other nostalgic?
Not really. I mean, obviously I like old stuff and I can feel a little nostalgic sometimes, but for most part I'm pretty much living today, you know.
Because obviously when you started the whole thing, the period around, you know, the Scum period, were there any long-planned project?
Or no, I mean, seriously. When you're young and you start a band, you think like, oh, maybe we can have a show. And then you have one show and you're like, oh, fucking, that's cool. Maybe we can have a show in the next city. And then you get that, and that's fucking amazing. And then suddenly you get a record deal and you're like, wow, this is insane. I would never have dreamt of that we can do this like 25 years later. I think it's crazy to think like that, and I.
And you had your daily job, and at some point switched to professionalism. Or
I think that the turning point was when I could actually leave my daytime job, and that was around 2006, 2007. That's when I left my full-time job to do Amon Amarth full-time, and that was kind of a weird moment actually. But yeah. But I think we always took small steps and we never really got this, you know. I mean, I understand young bands, they get famous when they're 18 years old and they're, you know, they think they take things for granted. While we always, you know, step by step, so we don't take anything for granted, you know.
Even now?
No, yeah, even today. I mean, I think the new album shows that. I mean, behind our backs, there's thousands of bands that want to have our position. Mm-hmm. And the only way for us to keep our position is to work harder. And we have never worked so hard on an album like we did on Berserker. And hopefully that shows on the album that, you know, it's not a lucky shot. There's two great songs. I think we actually have a whole fucking album that is great. And we, you know, we put a lot of work into our band to be able to maintain where we are today.
Right. So if we come back a little to the past and to the Jomsviking Viking period, is there in your mind one element, one souvenir, who kind of sum up this whole period? Like something pops in your mind immediately when you think of this record?
Definitely change of drummer, because that was something new. I mean, yeah. It was the 17 years Fredrik was in the band, and for Jomsviking we had our friend Tobias Gustafsson. So yeah, that's to me that was the biggest change.
Adding a new element in the mix?
Yeah, and also yeah, definitely a new element when we wrote the songs, because he was involved in the songwriting.
Okay. I plan to ask the question later on, but let's talk about now. It seems the band is amazingly stable. Few lineup change, like 4 or 5 lineup change from the beginning. But there seems to be an issue around the drummer. How do you explain that? Is there any kind of reason?
The thing is that we have to remember that Tobias came in to work on the album, and we knew that it's going to be only for the album, more or less. So it was a solution, because we didn't want to spend a year finding a drummer while we were writing an album. So we asked him to be part of the album as soon as, you know, Fredrik was not in the band anymore. So yes, of course, during those years that Jukka is the third drummer. But I think right now, I mean, this is going to be it. This is, I mean,
as far as you know.
Man. Yeah, as far as I know.
So now you feel the band as strong as it used to be, and again 5 guys ready to go.
Yeah,
good.
I think the positive energy in the band has never been so strong as it is today.
Okay. In general, what can you tell us about the recording session of Berserker, especially the fact you went overseas?
Yes. We first of all we wanted to make a change. We wanted to have work with a producer. That was different. I mean, if you look at Anders Sneap, which is amazing, and Jens Bogren, amazing too, most of melodic death metal bands use those two guys. So we wanted to have something unique, different. And Jay Rustin was that guy. And after we heard the mixes he made for the Pursuit of Viking live DVD, we felt that that's totally the right guy. And he had a different approach to the actual recording, because in the past, we always recorded all the drums on all the songs, and then all the guitars on all the songs, and so on. So Jay suggested that we start with one song and we make it finish, totally finished, with all the leads and vocals and everything. Then we move to the next song. So that's how we did this album. And after 4 songs, we went back to the first song and listened again, and then we could go back and make changes. And also, every song is different, you know, there's a different snare drum, there's different cymbals, there's a different tweak on the amps, and so it's a very dynamic album. It's not the same sound through the whole album. So that's also something we never did before. And also, I think, when we were recording it, it's not like super after click track, it's more live feeling. Also, the guitars, it's not perfect takes, it's more natural takes. I think the sound and everything, all that together, make it more like a real, like a live feeling.
Yeah, but the risk is to lose some kind of homogeneity within the record, no?
No, I don't think so. I think music should be a little live. I mean, there's nothing that is not tight, and there's
sure,
not.
I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, but you know, all that adds the little ingredients that is the live ingredients, and I think we actually succeed with that, and that's all thanks to Jay.
And just even in terms of, I don't know, available materials at the Sphere Studios, did you have to adapt one way or the other, or try new systems you might not usually use in Europe, or
no, it was basically the same. I mean,
you came with your own gear, and your
no, because we play Kempers these days. Kempers is, you know, is programmed, and you don't need anything. So for the guitars, this is a funny thing. The main sound, we had 2 amps. No, actually, we had 4 amps. So we switch around those 4, and sometimes we combine those 2, sometimes those 2. But most of all, it was Fuchs and Kettner mixed with an old Marshall, and the old Marshall is one of Dave Murray's old amps.
Oh,
so that's kind of cool, you know. I don't know, maybe he never used that amp, we don't know, maybe he did. But for us, having an old Iron Maiden fucking amp in our studio, you know, that gave us the extra energy boost.
So how many weeks or months did you need it to record the whole thing?
We recorded in 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
So we took our time. I mean,
which is usually longer or shorter than you used to?
It's a little longer than usually, but we took. I mean, we are fortunate to be in a position that we can do pretty much whatever we want to do.
Obviously, on a business point of view, for the last years, you went to a new level, working with a major. This fact to work with a major also allow you to do that kind of stuff?
Yes.
In the past, you could not go in the US to
we probably could have, but we could definitely not.
2 weeks or...
Yeah, but we could not afford the studio we had now, because the studio we went into is one of the best studios in LA.
The Sphere Studios?
Yeah. So, and also, yeah, I mean...
That's the advantage of being, I mean, in a major, is to... be more relaxed in the
we can do whatever we want. And also I mean we rented a house for the whole time, and a big house with for rooms for everybody and with a huge pool and all that. So so for us it was kind of like, imagine when you go on vacation, you can do a normal vacation or you buy all inclusive resort. So when we recorded, it was an all inclusive resort recording.
Right. On average, how many takes for each song? Remember?
No, I can't really remember that. But there's a few takes, of course.
And what's how what's your level of preparation when you arrive in the studio? What's the level of how final are the songs?
I think they're as final as possible. And for Berserker, we had a little different approach during the pre-production. So basically when we started recording, that was the fourth time we went into the studio with these songs. Because we already had two sessions with Peter Tagtry at Abyss Studio in Sweden, and then we had one session with Jay Rustin coming to Sweden for a studio in Stockholm. So we were very prepared. But of course, there's always new ideas coming up. So we changed a little bit, but not too much.
When you say you recorded four songs and after that you could see if it makes sense and you could come back, do you remember the four songs?
Yeah. It was the first song we recorded was When Once Again We Can Set Sails. The second song was probably... No, I can't remember. I remember the first song.
So you never record... what's your level of decision in the tracking order?
What do you mean?
You decide the order of the songs on the record. So it's your decision.
Yeah.
What's, from your point of view, the key element that makes you choose this one before this one?
I don't know. To me, it's all about the good flow. It's the same thing when you have a set list for a live show. You should have like start with something strong and then build it up, and then it should be maybe get a little bit more mellow or whatever, and then I want to have contrast but my main goal was that I wanted to have the first song on this album is going to be unheard, because in the past we had the first video song or first single was the first track on the album. So on Berserker, the first track, Fafnir's Gold, is not going to be the first song people are going to hear. So, for people who buy the album, they get the first single that's going to be Raven's Fly, and then they get the second single that is not going to be Fafnir. And then when they buy the album, the first song they're going to hear is going to be a kick-ass song, but it's going to be something they have not heard.
So the thing is that when you hear the first songs of the album, it's not the one you expect because it's already the singles. All right.
Yeah.
So you kept for you
yeah,
the strong ones, not to use a single. Not the strong one. Not the single.
I think
but this one of the strongest one, you put the first, Fafnir, Gold, and you consciously put it out of the single.
Yeah.
All right. It's an interesting strategy.
But the funny thing is that it only works once. First time you listen to album.
But
I wanted to do that. That's something I wanted to do for many years.
I mean, that's what I did in 2 years, 2 days ago, when I for the first time listened to the album, so I didn't know the single yet. But that's your first contact with the record, and I came blank without any...
Yeah.
It was interesting, and it's a strong song, for sure. 12 songs on the record. How many did you write?
12.
12.
And the funny thing is that we said that we're gonna only have 10 songs, because I actually think 12 is too many. I think the album is 54 minutes, and I think that's a little stretch. I think 40 minutes is enough for an album. But we could not decide on which two songs to remove. Right. And we asked everybody in the band have different opinion. We asked the management, the record label, we asked our friends, and everybody has different opinions. So that's why we said, okay, fuck it, let's do 12 songs.
Meaning you finalize 20 songs, or you make the decision before?
No, we finalize 12 songs.
So you get 8 songs finalized somewhere? You get 8 songs, will never go to the record?
No. No, we had 12 songs.
Okay.
We finalized 12 songs, and 12 songs is in the album.
Right, yeah, okay. From your now writing point of view, any... In Berserker, is there any ideas or kind of beginning of songs that you had already for Jom's Viking but could not find the right thing, or you always start from scratch?
I think... when once again we can set sails, the main riff, that's, I had it since... first time I showed it to the guys was during the Surte tour in Glasgow, so that's 2011. Okay. But I liked the riff, but I never found a good place for it.
All right.
And I think everything else is new. But I think Crack the Sky, the beginning, the chorus. I wrote that. On the first day on Jom's Viking tour in Oberhausen.
In Germany.
But that was still, you know, it was not for that album. But yeah, so the only old thing is the first thing I said.
So does it mean that, I don't know, in your cell phone or somewhere you get
I'm very primitive when it comes to that. My rules are kind of like, if it doesn't stuck in my head, it's not good enough. All right, I don't need recording devices. If I make a riff
make the decision.
If I don't remember it the next day, then it's not good enough.
Okay, but imagine you get it, you still get it in your mind the next day. One way or the other, you record it, or you keep that in your mind?
I can keep it in my mind until I start working on it.
And so you switch your brain to writing mode, and then the good things come?
I think the three first songs I wrote for Berserker are stuff that I was jamming on the last tour we did for Jom's Viking. Because before we go on stage, I always go start warming up. And I have my small amp, so I play 1 hour before the set, I start warming up. And I play riffs, and I made Crack the Sky, And once we can set sails, and then some ideas for Fafner, I think. That's stuff I wrote, you know, when I was warming up. And I kept them in my head, so when the tour was over and we were done with the Jom's Viking, I went straight to my studio back home and I started working on those three songs.
All right, so you're...
So, it's all in my head, and if I forget it, then it's not good enough.
So you can be, or it's good for you to be creative on tour?
Depends. I mean, I did that for that, and maybe next time I'm not going to do that. I don't know.
What's the writing process within the band? We know you've got three guys writing. Each of you one day decide, okay, that's what I can offer. You exchange before you finalize something before presenting to Johan and the other guys, or how the creative process work within the band?
For me, it's like I try to take a song as far as I can on my own, and when I'm done with that, then I invite everybody else to be part of it, and then we might replace something, or you know, but I always try as far as I can on my own.
Okay. But is that old school also? You exchange files or you?
Yeah, we change files, and we also send ideas to each other, and sometimes we do meetings that we meet and you know, talk about it.
And when during this process, the lyrics and so the different topics will come? late or pretty early?
For Berserker, it came after the music.
So music first, and
yeah.
Okay.
And I think also BJ, he was listening to the songs and, you know, okay, I have an idea about this, it could fit here. And then also if we have ideas, you know, I mean, for instance, the last song on the album, Into the Dark, that was something I explained how what I saw, and then explained that to BJ, and then he took it from there and he wrote this song about Loki.
Yeah, but the introduction is unexpected, I would say, very quiet, very slow, and then suddenly you have the whole power of the band coming. This introduction, this quiet moments, were there from the start, or you added?
Yeah, obviously not as good as on the album, because I'm not the piano or orchestra, but I can make simple version of it. I can, you know, I made it on my demos, but it definitely did not sound that good. But
all right. For someone who is not in the how would I say Scandinavian heritage or very well taught in the Vikings mythology, how could you explain what is a berserker?
Well, basically, berserker, if you imagine the best fighter ever, like I don't even know who's the best boxer today, but imagine Mike Tyson as a Viking. I mean, Berserker was the best warrior, and they were crazy. I mean, they probably ate some sort of mushrooms that blocked their senses. Wait, that made them
the champion of the community.
The absolute top fighters and warriors, and they were crazy. They did not fear death. They did not fear swords or whatever. You know, they were the most brutal of the brutal.
Okay. What a character. Within the band do you manage the cover picture? Is there one of you taking care of that? How do you change with the artist?
No, I think the same thing with everything else we do. We talk and we bounce ideas, and then when we had this Berserker, I think BJ came up there. I have this really cool story about Berserker, because he's actually an historic event.
The Stamford Bridge?
Yeah. So we were like, oh, that's a cool story. And then the more we talked about it, we said, maybe that's the cover story, you know? Fucking Berserker, cool. And it started from there, and then we were like, all right, this is what we want, this is how we want it to look like. And then we contacted an artist, and then we told him what we want. And
so you want a full scale, big guy ready to fight. So basically the cover is your explanation or your details, what you want in fact on the cover. You limit, I would say, the artist can obviously introduce its creativity, but the core idea remains yours.
Yeah, but that's everything. Every T-shirt design you see that says Amon Amarth, it comes from the band. The band ideas. And that's how we work. Because we are part of, I mean, we're part of everything that says Amon Amarth.
Yeah, and you want to have a full control of if you have the name.
But also we want it to be quality. Our vision.
Yeah,
it's our band.
For with Jones the Viking, you decided to kind of have a concept album, so around the same topic. There, you, as usual, I would say you have some different songs from different topics. In retrospect, was it harder one way or the other, or easier to work on Jones Viking compared to our other album?
For me, as a songwriter, it's easier to make music and then have something to fit my music instead of me trying to fit music into existing lyrics. Yes, that's more difficult. But I like the challenge, I thought it was fun, but it's easier for me to just do what I want to do and have Big J fit me. That's easier for me.
You come first and then the guy, like, all right. I read on the internet that you shot some videos in LA.
Yeah.
You asked for a guy to come and ready to get blood on him. Can you tell us a little about that?
I think the first video is going to be released on 20th of March.
very soon, okay.
No, yeah, that's fine. Probably next week, I think. Or is it the week after? Anyway, that's going to be Raven's flight. So that's going to be a cool video, but there's going to be more. So that's just the beginning.
Okay. Why in LA? Because you were there and so you organized the thing? Or?
Yeah, well, we wanted to try a new video director. We've been using Grupa 13 for many years.
Mm-hmm.
From Poland, and this time we wanted to try something different. And also, because the video guy, director, and his team, they're from LA, so we thought it's easier that we go there.
Okay. So just one last question, and after that a little quiz. The question is, you have to explain to me a mystery. It seems that you stop any guy or girl in Sweden, and he can play whatever instruments, like God. You stop a guy and he plays guitar and he plays like Malmsteen. You stop a guy and play keyboard and he plays great. Is that a cliche from my point of view? Or what's the
explanation? That's a cliche. I think
there's so many bands. So
yeah, it's a lot of bands, but
new stuff.
You have to remember, I don't know. I mean, my explanation used to be that when I was young, after school we had these, you know, hangout places where kids could go and hang out after school, and they had instruments. There was guitars, bass, drums. You didn't have to have your own guitar, and you could just go there and there's gonna be one guy that could teach you. So you could actually go there and jam and stuff like that. And that's why I started playing guitar.
And one day you pick a guitar, you try it, and like it, and you continue.
Yeah.
Okay, so no formal training at the beginning?
No formal training.
So you think because children have the opportunity to enter the world of music, one way or the other, it creates a lot of musicians within the country?
Maybe. Or maybe Swedish people are...
Kaji, or
maybe they are into music. Maybe there's a lot of music in Sweden, I don't know, on TV, and I don't know.
But
that used to be my explanation, at least, that when I was a kid, I could try to be in a band without having my own gear.
Alright. Just a little quiz to have a better understanding of your like in music, what you like or don't like. I know it's difficult, but favorite song ever?
War Assemble, Slayer.
Alright. What's the first album you bought for yourself? Not offered by
that I bought with my own money that I got. Yes, Kiss, Love Gun.
Kiss seems to have... It's a great band. In Sweden, half the guys say Kiss.
Yeah, but I'm that generation. Kiss was the biggest band ever for me.
I told you.
And H. Freely is thanks to H. Freely, I'm playing guitar.
So thanks to him for that. The last one you bought?
Last album I bought...
Can you still listen to what's releasing?
Oh yeah, I listen all the time. But the thing is that I stopped buying albums since I started streaming. So the last album I bought, I don't even remember anymore, to be honest. Because I'm one of the streamers too.
Is that not... A lot of musicians use streaming systems, Spotify, whatever. Yeah. Do you think it's a blessing or it's a curse? Because it might be a blessing for the user and curse for you to make to.
Yeah, I used to think it was a curse because obviously it's very hard to make money on streaming. But the way I see it, it's just today as a musician, you don't make money on the songs anymore. You make money on something else, and that's the way it is. And you know,
so stage merchandising, gigs.
Yeah, so. It is what it is, and I'm not better myself. I have Netflix too, you know. I mean, the world is streaming. But the last album I streamed and I listened to, that was the new Shillen Bottom, Hexed.
Okay. It might be weird, but weird question, I know. Is there a sound or a noise in your daily life that you like? And can be noble.
Maybe when I turn on my PlayStation.
Okay. Alright. On the opposite, is there a sound or noise you hate?
Well, I have four dogs, and I don't really like when they all four go crazy. If there's somebody walking by our house or something, and when the four are together, they sound a lot.
And last thing, what's your least favorite song from Amon Amarth? Is there one? The one if you never play anymore, no big deal.
That's a tricky one. It used to be a song called Abandoned, that is from One Sentence for the Golden Horn, but actually today I think Abandoned is kind of cool.
Or one you're fed up to play, even if it's a great song?
No, I don't really have anything that I feel like that. I mean, even the Pursuit of Vikings, we probably played millions of times. It's still fun to play live because the audience...
The feedback from the...
Yeah, the feedback is so good. So I don't really have anything like that. And
good. Better for the years to come. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.